This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora and welcome to Free Lifton here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. And I don't like the sound of my own voice. But yeah, kia ora, Fred.
Morning.
Morning, Mick.
We've got a shining light in the studio this morning.
Yes, we've got a guest.
Yeah.
For what, we haven't had a guest for quite some time.
Now, well, COVID, of course. So, Georgie, welcome.
Thank you. Kia ora. Lovely to be here.
Yeah.
So how long since your last guest?
Martin Gallagher.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, oh, good. Well, I'm standing with good, great people, which is good because he's a great person in our community.
Yeah. So folks who are listening out there, Georgie Danzy is standing for Hamilton West for Labour.
Yes.
White the T-shirts. So, must get one of those for.
Oh yes, you should all. I could give you all one if you'd like. No, you're completely impartial. It's fine.
Yeah, we're impartial. But actually, what we got you in for today is basically tell us about yourself. What drives you? What? Why are you standing as a MP to start with?
Awesome. Yes. Okay. So. The by-election voting is underway, and the election day is 10th of December. So if you're in Hamilton West, you can vote today or any time next week at a time that suits you. I guess if I start from the beginning, my interest in politics started when I was in my early 20s, and I became a teacher in my early 20s after studying, and that was at a high school in Waikato. And when I went into that high school, it was Te Amaru College was my school, Lodisau, a rural community, and when I went in there...
Hang on, Lodisau rural community?
Yeah, so
sorry,
they don't sit together, right? No, I see what you mean. No. Yep. So a lot of the kids in Te Amaru come from really low socioeconomic areas, like from I guess it's a rural community, but a lot of the kids that came from low socioeconomic weren't the farm owners' children. They were the ones that were living in the township.
Okay.
So I mean, there were plenty of farm children there too.
Yep.
But anyway, when I was in that school, I realised. And I guess this was a real kind of turning point for me, having brought up in quite a conservative background with my in my family. I just saw all the differences in the way that people were treated within the education system and the disadvantage that so many of our students had. And it set me up for the next sort of 15 years in politics and in the union movement, which I went on to work in. And so in that same time that I was working at Te Amaru College, I got invited to a Labour Party meeting. And it was in Hamilton East, and it was at a hairdresser, and it was the Labour candidate at the time. So this is 2011. Labour candidate was Sahai Orgard, if you remember her.
Yes.
She was great, still a good friend today. And she was speaking to a group of women and a hairdressers about the Labour Party, and it was incredibly inspiring and motivating and just amazing to see such a competent, values-based candidate. Yeah. And so that sort of That was the beginning of my journey, and I joined Sahai's campaign team and it helped her really learn. That's where I learnt about campaigning and learnt about how we get and reach communities. And so that was 11 years ago. And throughout that process, I've been very involved in politics in Hamilton and supported a lot of candidates and got to know a lot of volunteers and communities. And so I guess I got to the point where I felt like having the knowledge and the experience that I have, I could be really beneficial as a representative of Hamilton and Hamilton West. And that's why I decided to stand for this by-election.
Okay, so if you're fortunate enough to get elected, what would you like to drive into the Labour Party, or what's your specifics that you know?
Yeah.
If I was like you know local council, they'll go, oh, we want a green city. Well, sort of a bit more than just a green city. What do you mean by that? So
yeah.
What would you take? What would you like to see happen, or what can you do? What can you offer the Labour Party?
Yeah. I reckon that the focus for me, you know, I spoke already about the importance of community. And equality is a major value of mine and something that is central to what I hope everything I do, and I hope everything I do in the future. In regards to equality, ensuring that everybody can thrive as people would be the vital thing for me. When I'm in communities listening to people, the feedback from them is the same, which is that things are really tough out there. And Labor has implemented a number of initiatives to support people, you know, like the winter energy payments, cost of living payment, half price, public transport, reduction in the cost of fuel. Great initiatives supporting people, but there's still so much more work to do. And my absolute priority would be ensuring that all of our communities are looked after and that we are moving towards equality.
So let's not leave anyone behind would sort of drive you.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, very good. It's sort of a personal question. Well, a personal question. Family name. We've got to be careful now because some old lady in the British royal family got in trouble for saying, where are you from? So we won't go.
Oh, yeah.
But that's Danzy. Where's the surname? Where does it originate from?
Yeah, lovely. So it's my father's surname and he is Kiwi born. My mum is British born. And so Danzy, I whakapapatu Ngāti Tuwharitoa, and that's where the Danzy surname came from Britain back in the day. Some of my ancestors who you may have heard of, the most prominent is Harry Danzy, who was our race relations commissioner.
The first one, wasn't it? First one, correct? The first race, New Zealand's race relations commissioner.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Yeah. And so he was an author and he wrote a number of books. And one of an interesting thing about him, I find, is that he had this idea, because his focus was on Māori and equality. He had this idea that Māori and Pākehā need to work together to get to a point in New Zealand where we can all be equal.
That's right.
And it was quite a it has essence, but it was
quite... been in trouble in those days.
It was quite controversial.
Probably in trouble these days as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Exactly.
It was quite a controversial statement, and so that's something that's really interested me about him. And then my great grandfather, Roger Danzy, led the Māori Battalion in World War II, which was also very interesting. Family comes from. And my whakapapa is Rotorua. Nakuho is my marae, and just outside of Rotorua.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there were three Danzy brothers at the First World War.
Okay.
Mary Pioneer
Battalion. Pioneer Battalion, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Roger, okay. George and Harry.
Okay. Yeah,
correct.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He's a historian.
Because my great-grandfather was also in the Pioneer Battalion. And
really?
So was mine.
So we're all white as, you know.
Yeah, but we're European.
And Mick's from the UK, so he can be excused from that.
He can be an honorary member.
I'm now
an honorary
Kiwi.
Yeah, honorary Kiwi.
Yeah.
So, but it's quite interesting that, like, you look around, we look like a New Zealand Europeans, but a lot of us all have a link into the Māori world.
Sometimes
people say something derogatory to me about, you know, when they're talking about Three Waters and how unfair it is to give Māori at least a say or half a say in it. You know, all those bloody Māoris, etc. And I think, well, hang on a minute, you know, that's a little bit sensitive to me. You know, the European side of me has benefited over the years and generations, not so much the demise.
Not a idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so, and it's a challenge. It's been a challenging line to walk. I think, especially, I mean, for me, being someone that looks Pākehā, and you wouldn't know I was tangata whenua unless we had a conversation mm-hmm. or you looked at my tattoo. But I guess I find it a challenge for a couple of reasons. The first one is I never want to claim to be able to fully represent and be the voice of someone who looks Māori, because I know there's discrimination that occurs for people that I have never ever experienced because I'm white. So trying to acknowledge my tangata whenua and where I come from while also being hugely respectful of the discrimination I don't feel is really important to me. And the other aspect of that is I grew up very Pākehā. And didn't start exploring my Māori side until I was in my 20s. And so that's like a lifelong journey, right, to really understand that. I'm like 15 years in and feel like I still don't know anything. But I'm working on it all the time. And so I guess that in itself is a challenge for us to, you know, have that Māori side to us, but trying to understand it and living.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So those two challenges are ones that I see.
So you mentioned the word challenge. We now live in a political climate where there's a lot of cynicism, apathy about democracy. And democracy is under serious attack around the world. How have you found engaging with people? You know, you obviously meet them. Are you getting any sort of response, feedback, concerns?
Yeah, so the people I do speak to, we've done a lot of door knocking. I'm going out door knocking after this. The people I speak to, you know, they're either, because we you know, do targeted door knocking, so we're generally speaking to either voters that could potentially vote Labour of the future or a swing voters. So a huge bunch of people are, yeah, great voting Labour. But then there's also a section of people who know very little about the by-election.
And they're the ones that need to vote.
Exactly.
Because it's only people like yourself that stand between others who want to take reduce their benefits,
electricity payment.
They want to reverse the social stuff that Labour's been doing. How do you get those people engaged?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's part of the issue. Our communities are suffering from a little bit of voter fatigue, in my opinion. You know, just coming off the council elections. And I think part of that is people ask me, so will I get my voting papers in the mail? And then we have to explain that, no, you have to take your easy vote card into the polling booth and vote. And because they've just done council, it makes perfect sense that they don't know that the system is different. And I think that's been a real issue with people.
Can I just say something, though? And don't forget, council elections, only 30-odd% voted.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah, we're still dealing with this big group of people who for all sorts of reasons, and I think Mick's right, is that they are just not engaged.
Oh, yeah, I see.
And they're
right,
the
yeah.
ones that need to be engaged.
Yes.
And, exactly, because let's face it, if you the wealthy and the middle class tend to vote in large numbers. It's the poor that Labour tries to represent, maybe the Greens and the Māori Party potentially as well. But how to get the people they're trying to represent and trying to give them a better chance in life, etc., but how do we get them to vote?
Absolutely. Yep.
You know, and that's totally kind of your challenge. You know, it's your challenge for by-elections or general elections.
Ongoing challenge, yeah.
Because we know all those wealthy suburbs, you just need to go to the stats. All the wealthy suburbs, where the voting polling stations are, the voting rate's high.
Exactly. And I think it's been able to connect with people and allow them to understand that their issues are A, important, and that we understand their issues, and B, that there are options to address those issues so that they have some motivation to engage with democracy.
So it's a matter of the format, because most people these days they're on the phones all day long, they don't pick up a newspaper.
So
you're having to rejiggle your approach and try and engage with them electronically through their devices.
Yeah, we do social media advertising. Mm. That's a huge chunk. And actually, in this campaign, we haven't done any in-print newspaper.
Are you getting more engagement through using social media?
Yeah, I mean, we do get a decent amount of engagement, which is great, and that'll motivate some people to go out and vote. But I guess the whole thing we're talking about, right, is those people that are looking at it on their phone and go, oh, like, she looks great. And then they don't actually go out to the voting booth and place their vote. Yeah. And that's the issue, isn't it?
You give someone the choice to vote, but you can't make them vote.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, interesting, huh? Yes, I mean, this is not peculiar to New Zealand. This is going right around the globe. This
absolutely,
Social media has wonderful benefits, but it's also undermining... They're using free speech to undermine free speech. So you've got all these conspiracy theories and...
Yeah, it's made a difficult...
It's harder trying to engage with people.
It's a difficult... It definitely seems to be a difficult environment. And in the conversations I've had with the PM, I actually had a day with Helen Clark earlier in the week, which was phenomenal. And I talked to her a bit about this issue, and she said that what our... PM and our MPs are dealing with today is nothing that she would deal with, apart as far as that engagement with the public online, etc. So it's changed dramatically.
And I see in the Herald today, and there's all the big articles about they're doing a sort of survey and reviews with professional commentators about the social divide and the issues facing New Zealand and how rapidly it's all sped up. And the effects of social media, etc., behind it. You know, so what I'm just saying, I see 2,800 as of what I read this morning.
Oh, cool.
People have voted in the Hamilton West electorate. And
do you have the Tauranga stats handy? I don't, but I know that earlier in the week it was less than Tauranga by election.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's face it, Tauranga is a good blue ribbon Tory.
Oh, well, true. So they get more, might get more voters out, yeah.
Yeah, you know. That's
my aim is 40%. That's okay. My, well, it seems very low, but that's my goal.
There's 48,000 registered voters,
yep.
I see. So 2,800 so far.
Yeah.
And there's lots of places to see. I think you can go to the base. There's lots of shopping centres today. Open today. And they'll have more open next week, of course.
Yeah. It varies, eh? There's different, I haven't voted yet. And so the option probably would be, if we vote today, probably go down to the church in Melville, vote there. If we do it next week, next Saturday, we'll pop down to my daughter's old school at Hamilton West to vote there. So, yeah, there are options around the place. The veranda is not far from here. That's open on some days, not all days. So
yeah, that's handy. You take the kids to the playground and then nip in and
So your slant is education. I get the impression
background.
Is that something you want to carry on into the politics if you get elected? No, you're trying to push that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think
education.
Yeah, and I think it's so my background is in education. As I said, I started as a teacher and then worked in education unions from then. I'm also a small business owner, so we own a gym called Body Fit Training in Te Awamutu.
Because I see the disparity now between certain schools where kids who don't have electronic devices or don't have access to the internet, and then schools seem to rely heavily on electronic forms of conveying information. If you're poor, you're going to be even more disadvantaged.
Yes.
So these social problems are going to compound.
I agree. And I think this links into what you asked earlier about what are you going to do once you get in, and it's that social equality. Mm. And one of the ways that we're going to get to that point is to make sure that we're investing in education and health so that people have got the supports they need.
It's an ambitious project, and
hugely. It's a lifelong,
monumental.
Money
and resources,
and things keep changing, don't they? So these are things we work on forever.
Of course,
yeah,
it's never ending, isn't it?
Yeah,
I see. Going on to that, because it obviously does affect it. Some people are a bit blinkered, but most of us are realising that people who do crime's a big issue, obviously, and been stirred up by the media, etc. Ram rating, etc. So, but I say, how, you know, when all the candidates get together and you're having meetings, has anyone actually got an idea of what they're doing? Because we just get quite, we need more policemen, more prisons.
Yeah.
What's your take on the whole thing, Georgie?
Yeah, so I agree with you. It's been an absolute main issue and everybody's talking to me about crime. And so I'm taking that really seriously because I'm listening to the voices of the community. And so my take on it is that it's a really complex issue. And it's, yes, we need really strong policing. We need more police officers on the beat, and Labor has invested in 1,000 more police officers. We need to ensure that penalties are in place for offenders. And things like, you know, the recent announcement regarding fog cannons and dairies, supports for businesses, which I can appreciate as a small business owner. So that announcement this week meant that all dairies in New Zealand could get a $4,000 contribution to fog cannons. And the research shows that fog cannons are a deterrent to offenders. If they know there's a fog cannon in there, they won't target that particular place.
They're expensive items, guys. Tell me, my local dairy owner, and he said his one costs $4,000.
Yep.
If he sets that off to replace the cannons, it's $1,500.
Yeah.
Horrendously expensive. So. And he's had probably he's been raided 5 times.
Yeah, it's so many businesses I speak to, similar circumstances, and I guess
The place in the Hartlepool immediate area that hasn't been hit is a chip bar. Everything else has been hit.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so the other one that was announced this week was the government would contribute $1 million to Hamilton City Council. So that was a 1-for-1, so $1 million each to contribute. And
Priscilla came into town. She was talking to the mayor about this, wasn't she?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I hope that fund and that's for Hamilton City Council to use as they choose. So I hope that fund contributes to things like issues that you're speaking about if they go off. But anyway, the two focuses, I think, with crime. One is that policing, ensuring we get that right, but the other one is that community stuff. So when I was a teacher, you know, I talked about this. So, look, kids came into school. They came from really difficult backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And it's these same kind of kids that are doing the ram raids. And we need to ensure that we can support families and communities so that kids don't feel like they need to do it in the first place. And that links back to what you're talking about education, having a really good education, keeping our kids in school. I saw a stat the other day, which was if a teenager finishes year 12, the likelihood of them entering prison is something like 0.2%. So it really decreases.
The more educated you are,
More opportunities.
That comes back to to me, and a question that was proposed to me by Courier as a researcher on the phone, what is the big issue to me? And it wasn't crime.
Okay.
Because I think that most of our crime is symptomatic of our social divide.
Yeah, that's the point.
My issue is affordable, cheap housing for people. It's an issue. Yep. It's a big issue, not just in Hamilton West, but right across the city.
Yep.
And I just when I hear about crime being the big issue for Hamilton West, I just turn a blind eye and say no. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, fair call. Housing is a massive one too.
It's the result. Let's face it, crime is a result of years of poverty, degradation, pushing people. Let's face it, there's a lot of what I would call New Zealanders who are born here, etc., who have become refugees.
In
their own country. They have been pushed out. Houses, people come in, they've got money, buy a house. But those tenants, where are they going? You know, so there's been a lot of pushing together of people in the same circumstances. So, and as I say, that's the result of crime. We always go, oh, what about the poor victims? And it's true, they are victims. The victim of crime is said. But what do we say? Well, why is Benny and why is Marty and why is, why have they done it? Do we look into their background?
Yeah, exactly. That's what we mean.
And I feel like housing and having a home is a cornerstone of healthy people, right?
It's a basic human right.
Exactly, exactly. And I agree that it's an issue and that it does come up, not as much as crime, but I guess crime is just all over the media, so people are talking about it. But it's that important thing that you talk to, that everybody needs to have a home. And it's not just a house, it's a home. So getting people into more permanent residences where they know they're not going to have to move, not in transitional homes, is really important.
Well, I see in the Herald today the two big issues that affected the surveyed people, were two lots of 1,000 people, was basically housing access to housing and inequality.
Yeah,
you know, those are the 70%, bigger issues than anything else that worried them about social divide.
And it's been compounded by the fact the cost of living. And people struggling to put food on the table. So it's just never ending. And the people at the bottom of the heap are actually being taxed by inflation because they can't keep up.
Yeah, and the biggest thing for Hamilton West, it holds probably the majority of our emergency accommodation.
Yeah,
Ulster Street, for example. I would say to all our candidates standing for this particular by-election, go and visit these places, and I suspect that won't happen.
Mm.
And that'll be an eye opener for all.
Well, the trouble, let's face it, let's be real. The problem is, how do you get those people in emergency housing to realise the relevance of voting? That parties that are trying to actually stand up for them and give them a chance, etc. If those people don't vote, you're then going to have to go to hunt your votes out of the middle class and upper class, who everyone knows votes. So, you know, candidates go and knock on a nice, comfortable street, got it. Whereas I say, candidates should go in for the experience of these places, but they also know that from as far as the voting numbers, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Sadly, it's a tragedy.
The thing is, I've visited one, and I know some of my clients are in there, and some of them probably are Hamilton East voters, or they're probably on the Maori roll.
Yeah. Or not on the roll at all. So, okay, we're drifting off into our own sort of thing, but it's a big issue. So, crime is what's affected. And people will, often, sadly, we tend to react. We just go, crime's the issue, and that's what they'll vote on.
Yeah, that's
not to me. It's, crime, we know that there is hard-nosed crime. We've had people deal in drugs, sell drugs, get them from overseas, get in somewhere else. That's a major crime, and that's probably nothing to do with the social issues.
Yeah.
But there are other issues or crime that are directly related to
circumstances
around social inequality.
And on a more lighter note, what have you enjoyed about your campaigning and all that?
Oh, cool. It's been great overall. And even though, you know, especially this week has been really intense on the campaign trail because we're getting down to crunch time, trying to get as many voters out as possible. So it's been
When's the last day to vote?
10th of December, next Saturday, in a week.
Okay.
So it's been intense, but my favourite part has just been getting out and meeting people in the community. So I've had the opportunity to visit a number of places. One of the places I visited this week with Kitty Allen, our spokesperson for Justice, was the Drug and Alcohol Court at the Hamilton Courts. And that was just a great experience to be able to meet. We met the judge, and we met the workers, and we met the offenders, and we met the families, and just seeing the impact that that particular court has on people as far as their rehabilitation process goes was really great. The other thing I did yesterday, actually, is I was there to welcome a new refugee family in from Congo, had just arrived in New Zealand, and they were moving into their new home in Hamilton. And that was so, so special to be able to witness that. So experiences like that, where you can just see good things happening in the community, has been the absolute best part.
So this family, just to make sure that they're just coming from the Congo.
The
refugee family.
Refugee family. So actually, it's an interesting story. They're originally from Congo, and then they'd been living in a refugee camp in Rwanda for 26 years. Ridiculous.
It's all war. New Zealand's taken this family in.
Yes.
But this gets back to the people who've been here and they're getting pushed further and further back. This is what happened in the UK. They invited all the Ukrainians, quite rightly, for the refugees. But the result is people who've been on council waiting lists are being pushed back even further. So I imagine the same thing is happening. I'm not saying we shouldn't accept refugees.
But
our local refugees, as Fred described, are being pushed further back. That house has been provided for that family. That's great.
Yeah.
But that house hasn't gone to someone who's been waiting.
Bottom line there is that we just need more houses.
Exactly.
So we can accommodate for our Kiwis.
The housing program, and Labour first announced it was a silly move. They promised the earth, and they couldn't deliver.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be trying to build more houses.
Yeah.
Well, what's been done to try and accelerate the process? Because we really need houses.
We do.
We've got something like 28,000 people in emergency housing, motels, and we're still taking refugees, which is great, but there's a body of people that are getting pushed back.
Yeah. So, I mean, the most recent one announcement in Hamilton was 4,000 new homes.
We heard that was
announced a couple of weeks ago to come into Hamilton. So that's one step.
Over what sort of time period, roughly?
So they'll hopefully get the first lot of them open next year is the plan.
Good.
So it's ticking along. And obviously there's the issues with construction, with over COVID and getting supplies into the country. So we've got to handle all that stuff as we go, but
this is a huge problem. Not having to go at labour.
I agree, it's a huge problem.
This problem's been making decades.
So that announcement, that housing announcement, because you need, when you have housing, you obviously have to have the infrastructure to support the housing. Yeah. So as part of that announcement, there was also a water reservoir to be built in Hamilton West that would support that. So it's got the infrastructure.
And that same announcement,
on a slightly different note, announced the walking and cycling bridge that would go from the eastern suburbs to Hamilton Central, which will just continue to connect people. And now that we have the new legislation, meaning that more sort of houses can be built up a bit, people could, you know, we could build a bunch of homes, multi-storied homes in Hamilton East, but they're very well connected to the city centre, so easily accessible and things with that walking and cycling bridge.
Yeah. Well, this show has been critical of the Kiwi Build program because of its expense. And what I have indicated was we've already have a blueprint for cheap affordable housing. It just needed to be updated, and that's the Michael Joseph Savage government. That's what should have happened.
Yeah.
But good. All in good. More houses being built in Hamilton, but we don't want to run into the problem that Darren Toy, the regional manager for Kainora, had in Rotorua, where he was almost sounded out of town by what we call an audience of grey-haired, white, privileged people who didn't want to see any more Kainora houses built in their area.
Yeah.
We don't want to see
NIMBYism,
that. NIMBYism. So, good that we're going to get the houses here, but there's still a lot of work to do.
I agree.
And I'd like to see all candidates sticking up their hands and saying that on their heart and saying this is a crucial problem and we need to address it as a multi-party initiative.
Yeah.
I think that's looking at that Herald survey today. I do think there's a cross voter people going, yeah, this is an issue that affects all of us. So come on, parties, Labor, Nats, whatever. Greens, whatever. Come on, let's get our heads around. How do we sort this? And it's obviously going to have to be, okay, we need lots more new homes. And okay, if we're going to have migration, etc. Fine. We need migration skills, etc. But we can't forget Benny and Mary, who've been here and have often been victims for generations back of colonisation and have ended up being, as I say, refugees in their own land.
Yeah, not okay.
No.
Not okay.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else you want to tell us before you go on and knock on some doors?
Just that reminder to people to get out and vote. We've talked about this at the beginning. We need voters to get out and
vote does count.
And it does count. And having a representative in Hamilton where a strong representative is really important. And there's a huge advantage to having a Member of Parliament in Hamilton West who is in government in order to make these changes that we're discussing about today and really put the issues that are front and centre to the people of Hamilton West before the government. And that would be my priority, and I hope that people get out and vote this week.
Yeah, the participation, let's face it, win or lose or anything else, it's just our democracy. The worst thing is when this, I always feel sad when you see something and the voting turnout's really poor. And then people go, oh, what about this? Why haven't we got that? And did you vote? And that's the tragedy. So good luck for what you do. Thank you for what you do. All the candidates. I say, everyone's prepared to step up there.
Thanks so much for your time. Lovely to meet you all and catch up.
We'll watch with interest. But 40,000. 2,800 have voted.
Oh, yeah.
So there's 48,000 on the roll. So it'll be interesting.
Well, are you doing a broadcast on the election night?
We don't do that. No, but we just our show is that way we're focused towards the left.
Oh, well, yeah. Just social justice.
Social justice and stuff like that.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you for coming along.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll go back to moaning about what else has gone wrong in the world.
Good luck. Endless. Good luck, Georgie. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Can we take a photo?
Oh, you want to take a photo?
Are we still going?
Yeah. What we'll do is we'll do this.
Listen to me, baby, believe all I say. I drink gunpowder soup, two nails every day. I can take a tiger, slam his tail in the door, run around, look him in the eye, and dare him to roar. But I ain't bad, baby.
Hello, we're back. We're back with just the three wise men. Or the three venerable sages.
Oh, that's very kind.
I always refer to us as the three grumpy socialists.
Yeah.
I call it
the three people with thumbs in the dike trying to hold back the wave.
Or the GOBs, the grumpy old bleep.
Well, it was good talking to her, though. Good hearing some of the stuff she was talking about.
Yeah. We don't normally have guests in like that.
We used to, like you say, pre-COVID we had, but then, and of course, we had our comrade that has just died.
David Nielsen.
He used to come in a bit, but then, of course, we got COVID and we got all mucked up with that. But I know it was interesting to hear Georgie Dancy, and I think she's right. Just get out there and vote, even if you don't vote for it. But just voting is important.
That's why the person who knocked on our door yesterday, and I think he was part of the door knocking team, and he said just encourage you to vote. And there's no sending a political message, just saying, well, just encouragement.
Well, we do know if the Tories do win it, and it's by a lot or whatever else, they'll gloat and gloat. They won't mention that the fact the voting turnout's only 50% or 40%.
It'll just be the endorsement of their policies.
Yeah. And that's the danger of it. Of course, it's getting close to the general elections, and of course, if the Tories win it and there's a low turnout, they won't say. They'll just go, look, everyone supports us. We're going to get those, we're going to sort those Māori out and we're going to sort those crime out and, build a few more prisons.
And then I look at the percentage and say, well, that's who voted for you. That's only that 10%.
Or whatever, yeah.
Whatever it was that voted for you. So.
Anyway, I'll move on.
So
you haven't voted yet, have you, Craig?
I'll show you. I've got my, people won't see it, but I can show you.
Don't put it on your zip.
Oh, it's your wallet. Okay. Oh, there's a moth came out.
Oh, yeah.
So the old voting card.
What he's holding up is an easy vote card.
And that's what you need to take to the...
And did you get that in the mail, did you?
Yeah, in the mail.
Okay, so if you haven't got one, folks, you can still just rock up to the voting station, I'm sure.
You should be able to. Yeah.
It's just a faster way, but don't be put off if you can't find your voting card, folks. Get to the polling station, all right?
Because basically,
yeah, what
these cards give, and it helps the people who do the scrutineers or whatever they call themselves, is your page number and your number on that line on that book. So yeah. It looks like I'm not right near the bum end of it with that page.
Well, yeah, you are a W.
Yeah.
Just be thankful you're not. Y or Z?
Yeah.
Was it
Zelensky? Yeah.
Or have a double Z at the start of your name.
Yeah, that's true.
That could be trouble.
All right.
But what have you got, Mick?
Well, this really stuck in my craw when I saw this. This is Tuesday's paper. Perk adds cream to MP salaries. Mr. Luxon gets a $45,000 annual top up on his $296,007. Opposition leader salary by renting his electoral office back to Parliament.
Oh, the one he owns happens to own.
No, I have to. This is all perfectly legal.
Yeah, sure,
but John, it just, you know.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's a bad look, and it's not. And it's on both sides. He won't be the only individual doing this. There'll be other individuals on either side of the house who,
yeah,
come to this sort of arrangement.
And I say it's legal. You can. Yeah, you're rich enough. Legal. You can buy a building and sell it, and then rent it back to yourself through the parliamentary services.
These same individuals will be expecting lower income earners and beneficiaries to tighten the belts and just suck it up.
Yeah, I just don't like the ethics of it. It's a bad look. Yeah, it is a bad look. It's morally wrong.
And he's got a big grin on his face. You just want to wipe it off.
No violence here, have we?
Well, you'd have a grin on your face. You had seven houses and rented back your building your own to your own electorate, you know, to the taxpayers.
He's got that smile that just rubs salt in the wound, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. But we remember Bill English. I think even one of the Green MPs got caught out on this one.
Oh, there's been several. It's a perk, or we say people wouldn't say the word perk. It's an entitlement of do it.
It's all about full.
It's all legal, but it certainly has a fragrance to it.
And it wasn't caused by this.
Okay.
We won't go there.
Yeah, the other thing that came across was path ease for Maori roll switch. Officials saying denying Maori the right to switch electoral rolls at any time could hinder efforts to increase voter turnout. And it goes on to say, they also say that fears are stoked by national by tactical voting, vote switching are based on a theoretical possibility rather than evidence. And so the government has announced this month that it's amended its Maori electoral roll electoral opposition option bill to appease national. As passed in law required with changes to the Electoral Act and with 75% of the Parliament or a referendum to support it. The bill intends to make it easier for Māori to switch between the Māori and general role, and the argument has been about as and when they can do it. So, reviews of the electoral system have argued changing the rules make it easier for Māori to switch roles and improve voter participation. National support is only being included if they can local body and general election when Māori would not be able to change roles, and they want to do it for like 3 months before polling day.
Yeah,
they want to lock it into place. So that was an interesting one, eh? But the one of the accusation was that it might encourage Māori to vote strategically, and I thought, don't other people do that as well?
Yeah,
it's just smacks of.
And I've known that before, you know, because let's face it, traditionally, a little bit changed in the last few elections, but traditionally, Māori Labour always carried the Māori vote. And so if you were a Tory and happened to be Māori, like Tama Pōtaka, who's standing, of course, a lot of those would actually stand in the general election.
Yeah, that makes sense. What's the difference?
And we go back to what Mr. Goldsmith up in the act, you know.
Yeah. The pseudo-Maori.
Well, yeah. You know, and they always did a deal with the ACT parties. You know, Nats wouldn't start.
Right,
fine, that's gerrymandering, but that's on the good side. You know,
How dare other people think along similar lines?
A question, Fred. Have you ever switched electoral roles at all?
No, but my brother did.
My
brother did, because we all. Let's
so
face
you can't be on the.
I've got a 32. I'm one of my great great great. Like Craig. Craig and I are probably the same level. We've got a Māori ancestor, which does entitle us to go on either the European role or the Māori role.
Right.
But I've thought about it, but then I thought, I felt a bit cheeky, so I didn't, yeah.
I've done it.
Okay.
Because my 12.5%, I thought it would make a difference, so that's what I did.
A lot of people do, and I see the numbers of people who have what do you call it? Claim to be Māori, it's not the word, is have put down that the Māori in these statistics, etc., has risen hugely. And is that all people like us with an ancestor, you know, way back or what? I'm not quite sure. Or was it birth rate or what? So, I'd quite like to dig into that a little bit and see what's come about.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't encourage, if it does encourage Māori to
encourage people to vote.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to. I don't think that's going to change the Māori statistics for voting. I think it's got to go back to what we're talking about with Georgie Dancy, is what's irrelevant. We've got to make it relevant for them to want to vote.
Because they seem to be excluded from the process,
Well, a more positive, I see that first African-Americans being voted as minority leader in the House of Representatives.
Oh, that's a move.
Andrew Jeffries, is that right?
That's his name, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's history in the making.
Yeah, well, they had a president now and leader of the opposition, isn't he, in the Congress. He's quite a Tory, so to speak. The Democrats over there, people go out, the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. Let's face it, they're both right-wing leaning parties that the Democrats might have a few little bit more of a progressive conscience on some things.
But part of his speech's opening address was that Democrats are a party for the working people, and as you pointed out yesterday...
Hang on. CPR, please.
The Democrats just passed a bill federally mandating railway workers only having 7 days sick leave per year.
That's a big issue in America, and I haven't followed it. Cheryl's followed it more than me.
They claim to be representing the working people, and they do this.
Then they've mandated that they can't have more time to negotiate, and they weren't even getting sick leave. And I think they've now mandated that they're going to get... They were trying to get 7 days, but then that's been filibustered, which I believe just means dragged on, so it hasn't gone through.
So,
the Working Party, the Democrats.
Question mark.
It is, isn't it? And the railway industry over there, not the passenger side, but the freight side, is hugely profitable. Hugely profitable.
So the bosses are imposing conditions on their workers that they themselves would not put up with.
Yeah. But I thought
no sick leave or holiday pay or
What I thought was interesting, they don't have sick leave at all, these railway workers, right?
You get paid for off, you don't get paid, you get nothing.
Yeah. And what's interesting, guess what? And it's probably the same here in New Zealand, guess what? Guess who gets unlimited sick leave? All of Congress and all of the Senate. Then they're standing up and going, we don't know about this. Is an essential industry. We don't know if they should have any leave. We don't think.
Then people could argue it's Congress.
Pretty disgusting.
Oh, it is disgusting. And I hope they. I hope the what do you call the American railway workers go stuff you, but they probably won't. But as I say, it just shows you what do you call that? It's just appalling. That you've got all these privileged people going, we don't want you to have any sick leave. Back to work.
That's exactly what Mick Lynch has said in the British example, rail. These people, bosses, get all these perks and all this stuff, and the workers are fighting for a small increase.
Of course, but it's a fraction of comparison.
Isn't it shows you the bullshit? What I say bullshit? And it's like Biden and all get up and say, we've driven through a 25% increase for our railway workers over 5 years. Works out at just under 5%.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, but you know why? In my opinion, they also want. They say, it's about the economy. We can't afford the railway workers to hold us to ransom.
Why aren't the elites also chipping in as well? Why aren't they taking the tighten their belts and?
Yeah. Mick. Right. You're starting to sound like a socialist, mate.
I mean, all kids you can always tell them, we're all in this together as they march up, 1,000 metres behind you. We're right behind you, lads, and over.
You charge.
False collectivism, Mick.
Yeah. It's just
But probably, you know, it's just interesting. Is it because, say, all these senators and congressmen and the business people that lobby them, etc., you know, they're all probably watching the American-made tanks and money missile launches, etc., all heading off to Ukraine. And, of course, they don't want those to be stopped because everyone that gets sold, their share portfolio just nudges up a little bit.
So just the idea that the rich award themselves all sorts of social privileges and then deny it to the very people who are only asking for a fraction of what they themselves get. It's just greed.
And it's an essential service, so, okay, why aren't they looked after?
Aren't you looking after
them? I know that we have got shorter time because we had a guest, but can I just run through 3 points and I'm
Yeah, sure.
Banning of the karakia at Kaipara District Council.
Oh, that's
the argument was secularism and respecting other councillors' beliefs, or blatant racism and anti-Three Waters.
That's a very little minefield, that is.
Oh, yeah.
It's a minefield.
It is a minefield. We'll hear more about it because I think there's lawyers involved
gonna go,
now.
It's not going to go away. That's going to fester.
Yeah, so what, folks, just for that, is that basically the mayor, I think his name is Mayor Jepson. Basically has put the squash on having any karakia, et cetera, before the meetings, et cetera. So they became a stoush
because
of one of them.
Because it's a front to his cultural...
Oh, no, he just wants to be secular, not have anything.
Yeah, secular, that's what he's saying.
And that's the argument.
But what they're doing is not religious, is it? The Maori thing. It's not religious. That's cultural.
That's right.
It's a cultural thing. Yeah, not religious.
And they have been doing it beforehand, so...
Yeah, Nada Glavitch had a point. Well, she made a point of saying, well, you Europeans introduced karakia or prayer to us Maori. So what's the problem?
It's just sad because that's going to be a big race argument.
The other one was the renaming of Von Teep Street to Pu'u Tiki Tiki Street.
Still controversial.
Yes, I applauded the council for doing that, and I was called a troll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and the last one, and it goes back to the workers, but these are the postal workers in Britain want to go on strike, and their argument is for better working conditions and a wage increase. And I think the wage increase should be around about 11.1%.
Well, I think nurses over there are asking for 17%. They're never going to get it. But, well, do you imagine if that scenario was being played out in the United States?
Yeah.
They're bringing the army, the troops, and this
is going all around the world. It's not just the war and the global climate thing.
And the trouble is that people say, I need more money.
Getting fatter.
And everyone, need more money, and meanwhile the people left behind get worse, because it means inflation, doesn't it?
More money is going in some fat cat's pocket.
And they're willing to share it.
Okay. Can I just say on the Māori, one more thing about the Māori, and I thought it's a positive, since I'm a descendant of Ngāti Mania Pōtō. Today's settlement day, an apology day down at Tikawiri, at Tokunui Anoho Marae, and the Crown, Jacinda Ardern, is off there with, I imagine it's, who's the Minister for Settlements?
Was it Andrew Little?
Andrew Little's there. And they're off to apologise to Mania Pōtō, because Mania Pōtō, like all Māori tribes, etc., got hammered in the colonisation, etc. So there's an apology and some money, and it's $170 million in land and assets, etc., in cash. And it sounds a lot of money, but when you look at what dairy farm's worth, if dairy farm's worth $5 or $10 million, it's not a big amount of reparation, I suppose, to speak. So, it's pleased that it's settled. Because then tribes can move on. And just on that, you know, last week we were talking about, everyone said, why wasn't Jacinda up at the tragedy at Sandringham, where the shop assistant was murdered? It seems to be. She was actually over at the Chatham Islands, issuing the apology and to the people there who were, they were Ngāti Mutunga, I think they are.
They were the Moriori
come Māori from the Taranaki. Mm. And so it was an important thing. And people say, well, that wasn't a death or anything. Well, actually, the tragedy that happened to Māori way back then, there were multiple deaths by all sorts of social ills and diseases, etc.
Some people just seem to begrudge any...
And so it is important. But So it was an important reason she was. She wasn't just going over to eat a plate full of crayfish. I hope she did while she was there.
Crazy stuff, eh?
Yeah, what else is there, Fred?
No, Mick, you go, Mick.
This is spillover from last week. We were talking about the voting thing and a proposal for dropping it from 18 to 16. And the Herald's done a poll, and 21% voted in agreement with it. 79% against, and it's got a list of the age groups. 18 to 24, surprisingly enough, come top at 69% in favour. 25 to 34-year-olds, oh, sorry, that was 69 against.
Yeah,
31%.
Go further down the age range.
Okay, against 65%. 65 years and older, 81% against, as opposed to 19.4%. And surprisingly.
Yeah, it was quite large.
But then the 18 and 24, it was 69% of that age group were against it.
Yeah.
So it's only a pool
of people, but it does show an indication.
Like 70, 76, 85 against it.
Yeah.
The pros are quite low.
Which is probably understandable.
We've had this discussion before when they dropped voting from 21 to 18.
They'll start somewhere.
And
let's face it, when you're young, it'd be nice in a perfect world that the young were just having fun and not having to have all this stuff that comes their way. Good life, you know, and the realities of the lottery of life, of where you're born and who you're born to.
A lot of the yeses for the, say, 45 to 54, 55 to 64 and 65 plus are very low. And you would have expected that too.
No surprises there, in other words.
This is another that caught my eye. This is Susan St. John. You've pronounced it right, St. John.
St. John.
Yeah, anyway, she was having a go about the, instead of having a fence, she's against the government's adding social insurance. You know, they reduced the government's social insurance on the employment stuff.
Yeah.
It was going to add even greater burden on the less fortunate, the beneficiaries, working poor. And she's advocating, she's basically saying that latest Ministry of Social Development report on child poverty points to at least 60,000 children in severe deprivation. That's hovering on third world conditions. This is New Zealand she's talking about. So she's debating the efficacy of tax policies. What's the most effective way of getting the money or the resources to these kids out?
So
it's quite staggering, almost compared to third world.
Because I think
isn't
ACT support that sort of thing, that insurance type setup?
I'm sure they do.
Well, often wondered why they would support it now.
You can see why
it's going to affect the less off.
A lot more. It just exacerbate the issue.
Yeah.
So that's me on my soapbox.
You got 1.5 minutes, Fred.
Oh, 1.5 minutes. Well, I suppose the biggest thing is that it's in the Herald, etc. Is this thing, this sort of surveys on what divides us as New Zealand citizens, etc. And I say it was just interesting what we talked a bit about with Georgie. Is it
money?
It's wealth, inequalities, etc. Mm. And housing are the two big drivers.
Yeah, housing security, food security, all those things.
People do know there's something wrong. And so we go back, what you said, Craig, was very good. You know, everyone talks about the crime, but what's the underlying reason for the crime?
That's what we need to...
And if they acknowledge the problem, what are people prepared to do about trying to redress it?
And what are they prepared to give up? Because they all go, look at all this that costs us. It's between $1 billion, the Conservative is $1 billion of tax evasion to $7 billion of tax evasion.
Oh, come on,
guys.
We'll go after the tax.
Well, we'll go after Benny.
Welfare fraud. Yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone gets a chance, isn't the Herald? It'd probably be online, but quite interesting statistics.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for that, Fred.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Okay. So we're out of here, and we thank Georgie for showing up today.
Yep. Yeah. Don't forget to vote, folks.
Don't forget.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this Free FM podcast. If you want to hear more content like this, you can support Free FM via Patreon. Head to patreon.com/freefm89 to find out more.